done
Yeah.
earlier, hopefully,
Okay.
and be able to resume our social distancing. Hopefully, we all don't get stir crazy, right?
Yeah.
So just to get started, here's the antitrust policy notice and code of conduct. We start all of our meetings with this, and you know, it's mostly just to protect ourselves and protect others. And yeah, so take a quick look. I won't show this for too long because we have it easily accessible from our social impact, social interest wiki page group right here on the left side. So, you know, if you haven't already, please take a look. And if you are interested, please feel free to read in depth afterwards. So just a quick round. So I see a few new people, especially with Yaz joining us. If we'll do a quick group of introductions, and I can get started with that. So good morning, everyone. My name is Nancy Min. I'm the chair of the Social Impact Special Interest Group. My interests for the Social Interest Group are really just to kind of get everyone connected with each other and be able to, you know, work as a group and as a community to find new use cases and best practices that we can really disseminate into the greater community. Alicia, do you want to start?
Sure. My name is Alicia Noel, and I do research and consulting around food and agricultural supply chains. And included in that, there are a lot of blockchain-based traceability initiatives, as well as blockchain initiatives that are focused on how we can leverage the technology to aid farmers and other food producers. So there's a huge social impact there.
Hi, I'm Yaz. I'm the Director of Developer Relations at the Ethereum Classic Cooperative. We're a nonprofit we're focused on the Ethereum stack through open source development and funding and grants. We also support Ethereum Classic as a network through infrastructure support. My job mostly is like building proof of concept, open source tools and tutorials, in order to help developers leverage Ethereum as a blockchain technology for whatever decentralized application that they're building.
Welcome, Yaz. Alfonso? Hey, Alfonso, did we lose you? Then Alpin?
Hi, everyone. I'm with MercyCore. I'm senior technologist and oversee all of our digital currency blockchain and insurance, microinsurance, index insurance work. And MercyCore, for those who aren't aware, is a nonprofit. We work in about 42 countries and are part of the working group. Sorry, I haven't been able to attend several of the meetings just due to some of the underlying work we're doing right now in response to COVID and whatnot. But happy to be here. Thanks.
Glad to have you back. Fabiano?
Hello, everyone. Good morning. My name is Fabiano. I work with a nonprofit called World Vision International. I'm currently working with the Venezuela crisis response in Latin America. I used to be in East Timor and had a few blockchain initiatives. And I joined a group with some other colleagues from our global center. And I'm good friends with Alfonso. We've been trying to do some things together. And because of all the transitions from countries, I haven't been able to attend. But since the self-containment now because of the corona, I have more time. Not so many things happening. So I'm glad to be back. Thank you.
Glad you're staying safe. Hey, Mark.
Yes, you're talking to me, Mark Lebrati?
Yep.
Yes, hi, Mark Lebrati. I work with UN Volunteers in Bonn, Germany. I was a UN volunteer myself, and I was working in our Frontier Technologies Working Group on blockchain, AI, and big data, and I've been involved in various forums in the UN on blockchain as well. And so I'm very keen and interested in looking at ways to implement this technology for furtherance and mainstream accelerating policy for the SDGs. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. And then Vinod?
Hi, I'm Vinod. I'm a researcher at University of Nebraska, Omaha, and I do my research on the interaction of blockchain technology on the organization level, like how organizations are modifying, adopting in different ways this technology. Thank you.
Great, thank you so much. So we just have a couple administrative things to review quickly. And then we'll have our speaker today, Yaz, presenting about leveraging the Ethereum stack. So Yaz, thank you so much for joining us today. So quickly, just to go through a few things. The first thing is the Hyperledger Diversity, Civility, and Inclusion Working Group survey. Just wanted to kind of survey the group. You know, when you guys get a chance, please take a few minutes to complete the survey. It's available on our meeting notes page. The other thing was regarding the new member center. So we had just created that new member center page just to really kind of provide information for the, you know, regarding the community and how folks who are interested in joining can get involved. So if you guys have a chance, please take a look and, you know, feel free to give any kind of feedback or make any kind of modifications. You know, the main intent of this is to be as informative as possible without inundating with too much information. But also serving as a menu, I guess, so that folks can really understand what we're working on and they can help and get involved. So, you know, here it is as a bit of a preview, and it's available also off of the work streams and projects under the community liaison and then the SISIG new member center. So please really look, you know, eagerly looking forward for any feedback and comments regarding this page. The other thing, so, you know, Jim isn't on the call today, but I will follow up with him on where we're at with connecting with community presenters, as well as creating a social impact resources page. One thing that Vinod had mentioned at the Hyperledger Global Forum that we had a couple weeks back was when we reach out to community presenters, we'll probably be, actually, Vinod, do you want to present this? I don't want to.
Yeah. So my idea was to, like, in these meetings, what I observed is like everybody comes, what they are doing and what they have done so far or what they are doing it. It's more of a like their presentation. But as a community, I want suggestion was to how we can, like, as a community, support to those groups, or we can connect them, or we can move them ahead, instead of just everybody coming and presenting what they are doing it. So it's like taking a community a step ahead, like, okay, these are the avenues these companies are working, how we can make a collaboration or support them or carry them forward.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea. And especially for us, you know, as opposed to taking a more passive role, we can take a more active role with engaging with the various presenters as well as our community members. So, you know, Vinod, I definitely appreciate that. And Vinod, just to kind of give the community a bit of a taste of the Hyperledger Global Forum, do you mind kind of telling everyone, you know, some of, you know, highlighting some of the things that happened and, you know, what your thoughts were on that?
Regarding Hyperledger Global Forum?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was an interesting event. Lot of things. What I observed in that was, like, you can get to know on the different areas. One is more on the implementation side. Different companies were showing what they are trying, how they are trying to implement it in different ways, be it in the food supply chain, be it in the tracking any commodity from a grower to the end user or manufacturer. And other was more on the technical side, that how they are developing, what are the issues they are facing, what are the hurdles, and what are the anticipated future issues. Like, I attended a couple of sessions in which the governance of this technology was one of the major talk, like how we can identify who governs, how this technology is governed. So overall, this session was very informative for me. This was my first attendance, and I really like enjoyed and learned a lot. It's like, so I would highly recommend attending these sessions in future. You will get to know new ideas, you get to know meet different people, and like you get to know where this technology is advancing. Initially, the main talk was like, when these kind of forums started, was like, okay, what this technology is all about. Now the talk is moving how and where we can implement this technology. And I can see like a future maybe, okay, how we govern this technology. So that was my key takeaway from this global meeting.
Excellent, great. Did anyone else on the call, were anyone else able to attend? Awesome. Well, so exactly want to also reiterate kind of Vinod's point. You know, it definitely was a great informative meeting, and you know, it's interesting to kind of see the transition over the past few years with respect to the different use cases for blockchain, where we were kind of piloting, testing it, unsure of things, and now you know, a lot of the discussion is around production environments and how to move those and what those best practices are. So moving on to upcoming events, so I know I have a couple events put on here, but I'm inclined to believe that most of these conferences will be canceled in some form or moved to the virtual environment. Oh, and before I forget, for the Hyperledger Global Forum meeting, if you guys weren't able to attend, I believe there are video recordings of all the sessions that are available online right now. So if you guys want to take a look, those are available, and I can I'll add that link onto the meeting notes as well. But you know, if there are any upcoming events that you guys are attending virtual or in person, you know, feel free to you know, jump in and let me know, and we can add those to the upcoming events so that everyone can attend. I guess we're going to be seeing a lot more virtual work going forward, and I hope everyone doesn't get too stir crazy being home. So without further ado, you know, Yaz, you know, thank you again so much for, you know, taking the time to speak with us. You know, I miss all the troublesome and turbulent times right now. Yaz, would you like for me to share a screen, or do you want me to transfer this sharing screen with you?
Yeah, I mean, whatever works. I'm happy to share my own screen just for the presentation to go at my pace, but whatever works for you.
Yeah, I can. So what I will do is I will transfer it over to you, and you can just.
All right, cool. That works. Yeah, can you guys see the slide?
Yeah, I can see it.
All right,
cool. Can everyone else?
Yeah, we can see it.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you guys for giving me the time to give you a presentation about the Ethereum stack. Right. So, as I said earlier, Yaz, I'm like Director of Developer Relations for the Ethereum Classic Co-op. What we try to advocate mostly is the Ethereum stack itself, which is like the technology underlying Ethereum, you know, networks. Let me just. Yeah. So what is Ethereum? A lot of people have like a lot of different, you know, ideas about Ethereum. Ethereum, is it like a smart contract technology platform? Like, can developers like build their own smart contract and deploy it to the blockchain in order for, you know, to validate the smart contract, to test their smart contract under application? Or is it like a currency where you people try to transfer value between each other and tokens and all the other formats, or is it a blockchain network? Are miners mining every block at the consistently, and every block produced gets, you know, confirmed by the transaction that people are transacting in? So the reality is Ethereum is everything, is all of the above, and it's like a little bit of It had a lot of different like elements from all these different features. So what is Ethereum? When we talk about Ethereum for the presentation and like what my organization is doing is essentially Ethereum, we're talking about the Ethereum stack. So Ethereum stack actually refers to the technology platform that is used to deploy the smart contracts. And to give you like a comparison, ETH is just one network that is using the Ethereum stack. It's like the largest network actually that is using the Ethereum stack. It's like what we like to call a representation of the Ethereum stack as a network. But there are also like several other networks that are using the Ethereum stack, including Ethereum Classic. So my organization, we focus on Ethereum Classic as a network and we focus on Ethereum stack as a technology. There's Covan, which is a popular proof of work testnet for people who are testing network upgrades. MusicCoin is like a new one. It's just like a music kind of Ethereum sort of music sharing coin. Gorli is a proof of authority testnet. So it's like a different consensus testnet and it's more useful for people who want to test smart contracts. There's also enterprise and public sector permission private chains that are using the Ethereum stack. So in other words, let's say you're working on a social impact for this group, and for your specific project, you might, potentially use your own private Ethereum network. You can technically do that using the Ethereum stack. You can build your own private network or permission network where you know the participant, but everyone's using a blockchain network for your social impact projects. So I made this little chart, like flow of diagram. I did it really quickly, so it's not very professional. So the Ethereum stack, I'm just going to go over like these sort of components that I visualize are important for anyone kind of leverage the Ethereum stack. If you look down all the way down, like the lowest level is the internet, right? And that's where all the in your infrastructure in the cloud, that's where all your nodes and everything are running. Above that, you have what we call Ethereum clients. There's Hyperledger Bizu, which I'm going to be talking about next. And we have Geth and Parity, like a lot of diverse clients. And then we're going to talk about smart contracts like Viper, Language, and Solidity. We're going to then talk about smart contract IDEs, which are useful technology that help you utilize the smart contract and deploy them to the Ethereum clients. And after that, when we go into, decentralized application, we talk about like popular application frameworks that are utilizing these frameworks in order to build decentralized application for smart contracts. And finally, we're going to talk about the users, how the users are going to interact with your decentralized application and stuff. And I might try to figure out, I have an example later that I can share with you for a social impact project that is using the Ethereum network. And we can, talk about that. So how to run an Ethereum network. So my favorite preference to run an Ethereum network right now is Hyperledger Bizu. It's a really good client built on using Java. It was built by the Pegasus team at ConsenSys, a really well-engineered team. Like they have really great technical chops. The code base is really well written. It's been donated to Hyperledger from ConsenSys recently, and at my organization, we try to really support Hyperledger Bizu. We try to figure out any improvement we can add by funding different development teams that can help add them. Currently, we're working on KSHAC 256, which is a mining algorithm on a testnet, which might have a better trade-off than the current mining algorithm. And among other things that we're trying to help out with Hyperledger Bizu. The other ones are also popular. Parity Ethereum is probably one of the most popular clients right now. But the problem with Parity, Parity Ethereum is a Rust client. So Rust is really small, low impact on your infrastructure. So doesn't take a lot of resources. But the problem with Parity, they're not continuing development on Parity Ethereum. Instead, they created a DAO for something they call Open Ethereum to allow other participants who care about Parity in order to manage it together the future of Parity. So right now it's really uncertain what's the future of Parity client. So I don't really recommend anyone running Parity right now. The other thing is Ethereum Geth. Ethereum Geth is funded by the Ethereum Foundation. It's probably the the largest, one of the largest clients out there, specific to Ethereum and ETH testnets. So it's great. It's been performing well. There's an enterprise version of it called Quorum and stuff, which is being used. And I think Quorum is going back to consensus. I mean, it's going to join consensus. For my specific case, specifically for anyone in enterprise or doing social impact, Hyperledger Base would be the best because it has like all the different kind of Ethereum stack clients like ETH, ETC, Goerli, and you can, you know, create your own private or public testnet or like real network. When we talk about smart contract, we're talking about application, code application that allows direct interaction with the blockchain. So think about it like if you're building like a software and that software is going to be directly communicating with the blockchain. It's sort of like if you write like a script and that script, you give it like an API. And like, let's say you want to get information from Google or stuff using an API. So the same thing applies to smart contracts. Smart contracts, in a way, they're giving you an API to the blockchain itself. Except we don't really call it API, we call it an application blockchain interface, which is like a JSON output of method that you can use to interact with the blockchain after you deploy your smart contract to the blockchain. Just to give you guys a little warning for the talk, it's gonna lean a little bit more technical, but I can simplify it like to a lot of high level sort of abstract. For the smart contract languages, we have Viper and Solidity. Solidity is the most popular client. It resembles C and JavaScript. It's a very popular one. Like if you ever gonna start off building smart contracts, your best bet is to start off with Solidity just because of the amount of documentation and examples given for Solidity and the amount of people who are using Solidity. However, Viper is a new one in beta. It's kind of more like Python, like sort of language. It's more focused on security, like it stops you from doing a lot of things that you would be able to get away with in Solidity, just to focus more on security. Because, you know, when you have a smart contract, you want to make, you know, sure that things are secure. People can't, like, you know, find vulnerabilities and hack it. So both of them actually, like, when you write smart contract code with them, they compile and can be deployed to any EVM chain. So EVM chain is the Ethereum virtual machine, which is, like, part of the Ethereum stack. Like this is like where, if we go back here, like smart contract, you write in smart contracts, they get deployed to Hyperledger, Basu, Geth, or Parity, which are like, they'll be understand the bytecode that are generated by these and be able to, you know, deploy to the blockchain. So next we're gonna talk about decentralized application development environment, what we talked about before. There are two great examples, Truffle and Bounty. Now, Truffle is the most popular one. Like, everybody's probably using Truffle. It's offered by consensus, it's JavaScript-based. It allows you to do scripting, deployment, compiling smart contracts, writing test suites. These are all, like, given in Truffle. However, Bounty is a really new one that I played around with. It's really great. It's Python-based, so it allows you to do more popular Python libraries for testing than anything that JavaScript can ever provide you. And there's a lot of, like, what do you call it, issues with Truffle from a development point of view. I think I'm looking at it as a Python developer, so I think there's a better trade-off in Bounty than JavaScript and Truffle. Infrastructure level scalability. I can explain this. Infura is basically the most popular way you can connect to an EVM endpoint for your application. So to give you an example, basically when you're building your own, you know, decentralized application using maybe Truffle or Brownie for your using your smart contract languages, the other thing you have to do is deploy them to the Ethereum network, right? And for that, you need those clients. Remember, we talked about the Hyperledger, Basu, Parity, and Ethereum Geth. So usually what you should be doing is running your own client, and it gives you a lot of trade-off in the fact that you can actually trust that, you know, the data that you're getting from the blockchain is accurate because you're running your own client rather than relying on a third-party client. But for a lot of developers, they don't want to run their own client because it takes a lot of time. Like, you have to run it in the cloud, you know, you make sure it never turns off and stuff. So there's a lot of management involved with it. And Infura, what Infura does, it provides you like an URL. So instead of like running on client and stuff in the cloud and like, you know, waiting for it to sync and then deploying your smart contract to it, you can use Infura itself, which just gives you an URL, and you just deploy to Infura and it will deploy to the smart, like to your smart contract to the blockchain, and you don't have to do much, right? So it's very convenient for that. EtherCluster is another project. EtherCluster is actually built by me. I built EtherCluster like a year ago. EtherCluster is exactly kind of like Infura, except it's open source design specification. So it allows you to use Terraform, Kubernetes, and Docker, which are the latest cutting edge technology in blockchain level scalability. It's very fully documented. So there's a test app for it. So you can try EtherCluster today. It's free to try. And if you like the way it's set up, you can use the documentation to build your own EtherCluster for your specific decentralized application platform. And EtherCluster has been recently added to Hyperledger Labs. I'm hoping that, you know, the fact that it'll be under the Hyperledger Labs umbrella, I can bring in more developers, maybe coming from enterprise, who would help, like, you know, build it more, ramp it up and stuff. But for now, it's like, for what it's supposed to do, it's really well known. To give you guys an example why Infura and EtherCluster are important, let's say we're at, you know, you're hosting a party, and people show up to your party, and they want to connect to your Wi-Fi, right? So you give them the Wi-Fi password, no problem, they're connected to the internet. Now let's say 10 more people show up at your party, and they also want to connect to your Wi-Fi. So what happened to your Wi-Fi? The internet, because more people are connecting to it, your internet connect, you know, speed goes down. It gets really, really slow. So ideally, in an ideal scenario, you would have another router come up, and that would allow more people to connect to your, you know, at your party, you know, so you have faster Wi-Fi. So the same logic can be applied to the, like, Infura and EtherCluster. More people are connecting to the blockchain using your decentralized application, but the more people connect, the slower that connection based on, a, you know, from the client that you're running. So using scalable block infrastructure, you can add another client that is already in sync to accommodate for more users and stuff. And Infura and EtherCluster can do that automatically. So it's scaled based on the need of your application and how many people are using it and stuff. So it's like, it's pretty cool because it's like, you know, it's like on the back end kind of thing, but it's like helped a lot with a lot of decentralized applications that are building these things. Let's talk about dApps and decentralized applications. So the most of the dApps are using MVC front-end modules and libraries such as Angular.js and V.js and Django. So if you come from the full stack world, like, these sort of libraries are very popular. And they really interact with the smart contract layer. So instead of connecting to a database and an API, what they're connecting to is the smart contract, which is the ABI thing, using the ABI, and that's where they can monitor the smart contract and stuff. I'll give you examples of, like, decentralized application. Gitcoin is really cool. It allows you to, if you heard of GitHub, which is where, like, all their open source libraries are hosted, Gitcoin allows you to post bounties on specific issues and problems in those libraries that are need people's help, and any engineer can, you know, accept the bounty and, you know, do the work required and then get paid either in Ethereum or DAI, which is like a stable coin. OpenSea is a great little open market for trading NFTs. NFTs stand for non-fungible token, which is an ERC-721 standard specification for Ethereum. And it can be applied to any of your other testnet and stuff. So basically, it's kind of like, like, if you have collectibles, if you have digital art that you want to make them, like, you know, with authenticity, just like one art, you can make it a token, and that token is like represent that this art, digital art, is authentic. It's coming straight from the designer. Augur is what you call prediction market. Now, prediction market is pretty cool. Having prediction markets online, I mean, on the blockchain, where you can, like, you know, you can bet on who's going to be the next president or what's the weather going to be like tomorrow. Prediction market using the blockchain, and people get paid out in either Ethereum or Augur, which is your own token. So how do users interact with the blockchain? Like, let's say I'm like, okay, I'm visiting Gitcoin, I'm visiting OpenSea and Augur. How do I interact with the blockchain? There's a lot of application. There's MetaMask. MetaMask is a popular Chrome and Firefox extension that allows you to connect to the dApp. Using MetaMask, you can fill up your wallet with your Ether, transfer Ether to that wallet. And anytime you visit a decentralized app, MetaMask, it's like it would have to probably have integration with MetaMask, and then MetaMask would allow you, like, let's say, oh, I want to pay for this bounty on Gitcoin, you know, with MetaMask, it would like approve it. So, Portis Informatic directly, in my opinion, more user friendly because they're more like username password kind of setup rather than MetaMask, where you have to, like, you know, there's a little bit more onboarding with MetaMask, in my opinion. But Portis and Fortmatic are also really cool. You can find Fortmatic as well available on OpenSea as an example. Like, when you sign up, you know, username and password is very, like, user-friendly for what people are used to, and they can use that in order to interact with the blockchain and with Ethereum specifically. Explorers are important because it allows you to take a look at what's going on in the blockchain without actually having to go to the back end to analyze your Geth node or your Hyperledger Basu node. Explorers allow you to, like, let's say you send a transaction. Let's say I'm using MetaMask for Gitcoin. I want to make a transaction on Gitcoin. And then after that, you know, the transaction goes through. MetaMask would provide me, like, a transaction ID. I can click on that. I can see it on either BlockScout or EtherScan. It showed me how many confirmations, whether it got approved. So all that information. BlockScout is open source. So let's say you're building with Hyperledger, Basu, or Geth or something, and you're building your own private network for your social impact projects. You can run your own BlockScout Explorer, so users who are using your social impact project can actually, like, look up the transaction if they've gone through or not. And it's important because it gives you, like, a sort of sanity. Okay, it went through, or, you know, you can actually confirm if anything went wrong and stuff. And it's good for transferring value, or, like, if you're interacting with a smart contract, at least it'll give you a way to audit it. EtherScan is a really popular Ethereum Block Explorer, but it's not open source, so I can't really recommend. I mean, it's great for, like, checking it out and stuff, but BlockScout is actually really well done, and it's, you know, open source, so anyone can run it. I personally run a few BlockScout instances for our infrastructure. And, yeah, thank you so much for this brief presentation. You can always email me at yas@utccooperative.org, and you can follow me on Twitter and, you know, DM me and stuff if you have any questions. I also have a video from my friend Simona. She basically went to the Philippines, and they did a social impact project where they basically incentivize people to clean up the beach, and based on how much they clean up, they get rewarded in crypto tokens as a way to help, you know, clean up the environment and stuff. She had a video she sent me that I'm happy to share in the chat after if people want to take a look as an example of using Ethereum and social impact. But yeah, thank you so much for having me here. I'm happy to take any questions.
Yes, thank you so much for the presentation. And if you would like, you can feel free to send me the link to it, and I can add it to the wiki page just so that the broader community gets access to it. Any questions from the greater community?
I have one question.
Yeah.
So how this Ethereum stack is different from Fabric? Are they the similar technology, somehow different, or just wanted to have a little bit of?
Yeah, so Hyperledger Fabric, I'm not sure. Like, I'm not very familiar with the technical details, but I understand. What I understand is another smart contract platform. But like Ethereum itself as a smart contract platform is just like the most used one. It's the most tested one. It's most used out in the real world and stuff. So I can't really answer like what the difference between Hyperledger Fabric. What I do know, Hyperledger Fabric is tried to do something close to what Ethereum is, but it's like there are differences to it. But Hyperledger Basu, on the other hand, is Ethereum. It's like using Ethereum technology. It's like pure Ethereum, and from when you want to build a smart contract platform, having multiple different technologies to build a smart contract platform, they're essentially doing the same thing. Sorry. Yeah. So if they're essentially doing the same thing, it's kind of like it's redundancy. So I think it was really great that Hyperledger Base 2 was, you know, accepted by Pegasus and stuff, because I think like for enterprise, being able to utilize the Ethereum stack rather than trying to reinvent the wheel and build their own, or Hyperledger Fabric, which I think, I don't know much information about Hyperledger Fabric, so I can't do the comparison. But in general, I think like having enterprise developers on Ethereum technology is very exciting, because you need more eyeballs on it, more people testing it and stuff. And it's something that, you know, more people should be able to adopt.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I hope I answered the question. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm going to add the link to YouTube to the chat if anyone's ever interested. I just posted it here. Anyone else have any questions?
I take it that's it for questions for today. Yes, thanks again so much for your time. And, you know, it was a great presentation around the Ethereum stack. And I will send out your contact information to the group, probably in the meeting notes.
Right, perfect.
If anyone has anything, we'll definitely follow up. Look forward to seeing you around sometime. And hopefully everybody on the call stays safe in this time. And, you know, take care, and we'll end a little bit early.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.